This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 25th of May, 2021, and the week really shooting out of the gates yesterday. So we have U.S. stocks, at least, up very strongly on the day. A lot of this attributed to comments from a trio of Fed officials, especially the Fed's Lael Brainard. She's on the Board of Governors talking about inflation expectations for the longer term appear very well anchored and underlying the message in general, as did two regional Fed heads that were out speaking, that they view any near-term spike in inflation as something that will prove transitory. Kind of looked like an excuse, if you will, but Treasury yields did go a little bit lower on this. And we saw, of course, as mentioned, risk appetite really surging again anew and really taking out a lot of, what you could argue the last tactical resistance levels. So if we look at the NASDAQ 100, you can see those levels that we probably mentioned prominently last week, the 61.8% retracement, 21-day moving average, that's all been taken out. So around the 13,500 area, and then this 13,625, it really leaves only the all-time high there, just above 14,000, as the major resistance. I don't know if you're seeing anything else, Peter, that's got the markets in a positive mood here, but it was a pretty strong session, to say the least, yesterday.
It was a very strong session, and you can see that with the big breakout follow up today as well in the stocks 50. That breakout came yesterday, and then the CSI 300 made a pretty big breakout, as you can see on slide 3. That was at least it speculated, but it seemed like the catalyst and the driver was the Chinese government's effort to clamp down on rising commodity prices. Obviously a lot of the companies that are heavy users of raw materials were shooting higher because a government effort to curb these this rapid input cost rises obviously good for profit margins, and a lot of Chinese companies are running on very thin profit margins, so that's the sensitivity to those type of things are pretty high. But looking at yesterday, movements, John, if you look at the small insert as well on the left hand side, across the theme basket, it wasn't unilateral, a risk on day, what we have typically seen where you have bubble strongs being bid, and the biotechnology, it was mega caps that did the best, and then had the semiconductors and travel, and then you had financial trading in there that for a long time I've had the opposite correlation. So whenever we had a down day, that would be up and not following up on a strong day. So it was a little bit weird session yesterday, I would say, but we have the breakouts, we have the momentum in place, and that's what equity investors care about, and I think it, especially the Chinese reaction is a strong signal, and I think as well it's the U.S. versus rest, and it's the value versus growth. So I mean, U.S. versus rest, it's basically this idea that we've had three or four major dollar cycles in the past three decades, and whenever the dollar has been in a weak cycle, it's actually good for European equities and EM equities, and as I've been saying, I think that a lot of the Chinese equities and EM equities actually look quite cheap here, and the value versus growth is still very much intact. But again, it all comes down to that inflation, and that inflation story narrative have been seeing some cracks lately, but I still think that the vector is higher in inflation.
Yeah, speaking of inflation, Althea, you're pointing out that today we're seeing the conference board with its latest survey, not just for consumer confidence, but this, just like the University of Michigan survey, this contains an inflation expectations component. How focused is sort of the bond market? Of course, they're focused on what the Fed is saying, but also on this type of survey data. And what's your take on the treasuries here now that we've reached about a 2-week low in the 10 and 30 years yields in the US?
I think, John, that where investors have to focus is that last week we have seen a correction in break-even rates, but real rates stayed stable. So basically what he's saying is that the bond market still believes in the average inflation targeting framework of the Federal Reserve and that the Federal Reserve will let inflation spike before tightening inflation. So what we might have seen last week was just simple correction, a temporary correction. And if we have a strong confidence data coming out today, the break-even rates could resume to rise. If you guys want to see more how the real rates are behaving compared to the break-even rates, you can see that in slide six. But besides that, this week, everything is going to be about inflation because we have also the personal consumption expenditures on Friday. So I still believe that U.S. Treasuries will be volatile, and it's key to monitor the seven-year option coming out on Thursday.
All right. And with this drop in yields, and if you're looking over at Forex, you would expect the yen to be doing quite well. It's a pretty mixed bag, though. So you have dollar yen, yes, it's ticking towards the recent lows. But if you look elsewhere, you're seeing that it's still quite quite weak. And that's despite the reminder I pulled out last week that with the latest inflation data still showing outright deflation, even year on year in Japan, it's a bit surprising that this real yield situation, which Japanese real yields looking better than they are almost everywhere else, has not resonated, has not brought any support. But so it just appears to be reflexive. Market here on where nominal yields are going. But anyway, on that front, we have, if you look at slide four, we have, I put up the 10-year spread of the euro versus the yen in the black there, and you can see the euro yen, the currency pair in blue. And we've seen a dip again in bund yields out of Europe and falling EU yields in general. And this really hasn't led to much downside in euro yen. So I'm wondering if there's just a general sentiment issue going on here in Japan as well with their struggles with getting vaccinations distributed to the population and the risk that this Tokyo Olympics gets canceled. This is something that's getting more prominent over the weekend and yesterday with the travel ban from the US and some more prominent calls for them to go ahead and cancel the Olympics. But just wanted to watch, there's some tension there and where the yen is trading, I think, versus what some of the underlying bond markets are doing. Ole, I want to get over to you. We had, it's your weekly roundup time. It's our Monday, if you will, because we had a holiday yesterday. What's your focus on commodities this week and your latest on the positioning, where the market's positioned as you've got a COT roundup, I guess, coming out?
Yeah, on slide eight, John, we've got the just a recap of some of the movements in the latest recovery or reporting week, which ended last Tuesday, May 18th. And I think the key takeaway from that report, which you can find on analysis.saxo, was another strong week in terms of gold buying. We reached the highest level on the net length in several months, and at the same time we are starting to see some weakness in the agricultural sector. So, and that's the green line you can see there. The grain sector especially suffered some reductions last week, and it's interesting to note that even though we've had this strong rally throughout this year so far up until recently, the net length has not really expanded, and resulting in that drop last week to take us back down to length we last saw around December time. So there's been some lukewarm attitude to the run-up we've seen recently, and I just put in the Deutsche Bank agricultural fund. You can see we suffered a bit of a correction there. So far, nothing major, and it is probably the sector which is at risk the most because of we still have a growing and planting season ahead of us, which potentially could yield a good yield this autumn, and that would alleviate some of the stress in the market. But if we look at some of the other major commodities, I haven't mentioned gold today. Gold is just in a holding pattern here. It looks like it just needs to take a rest, maybe a small correction here. As long as it stays above the 200-day moving average, around 1843, there's no major developments there. We obviously got steady treasury yields, as you mentioned, and also the dollar is traded with softer, and that's supporting commodities in general. So the comeback kits over the past 48 hours has been copper and crude oil. Copper's correction has been once again quite shallow, 9%, not a great deal when it's more than doubled since the low last year. And crude oil just moving a bit higher on the assumption that Iranian barrels, if they are allowed to increase production, can be absorbed by the market. overall, however, still in the oil market. I do share the belief that oil markets, oil prices will eventually move higher, but I think we just still have to be a bit cautious in terms of the timing, because we need to have synchronized pickup in global demand. We're still not seeing that with the virus outbreaks in Asia.
Okay, and then there's another issue that's a bit exogenous to a lot of what we're talking about today, but it just demands our attention because it's such a remarkable phenomenon. And we actually addressed it a bit in the special edition podcast, if you want to tune into the one we put out late yesterday, in a conversation I had with WolfStreet.com's Wolf Richter. And our first topic of discussion was his one of his most recent articles on this incredible rise in the Fed's overnight reverse repo facility, where it's risen now. And the chart I have put up there from his website on slide five is actually out of date, because over the last couple of sessions since that, it's risen even further. And so we're talking about $394 billion. This is, we're at now versus, essentially zero only some months ago. And it really demands some kind of explanation. I'm not sure I have all of it. I think we addressed it a little bit on the call. Some of it, the irony there is that there's simply so much liquidity in the U.S. banking system, and this is a reflection of that as the market looks to offload cash and put it into something else, and that the ironically, this is the Fed actually lending out treasuries that it itself has bought. So you have them doing QE, and there was even a record QE amount, not a record QE amount, but a very large QE amount last week of over $90 billion. And with all this QE, they're still finding that they're needing to lend out all these treasuries. Some interpreting this, I will tweet out a Market Watch article I was just perusing on our Twitter feed, pointing to the idea that the Fed's QE is getting simply not necessary, and that they will need to roll out that taper message. Makes you wonder if, to ease that taper message, they're continuing to issue these calls on inflation being transitory, so it'll offset somewhat that taper message. I don't know. We need to look some more into this, but it's something that deserves tracking because it is a distortion and something that in the past has not happened except in association with quarter ends, when large banks were trying to reduce the size of their balance sheet by putting some of their liquidity into U.S. Treasury. So we'll track this issue, and we'll be trying to come up with more answers for you in the days and weeks ahead on that. For now, all this liquidity in the U.S. and this message from the Fed is leading to a weaker dollar. So I have the overview on slide 7 of FX, and the weak dollar is the most prominent FX signal among the G10. We have dollar renminbi posting new lows for the cycle here, and eurodollar, actually, that chart is slightly out of date because we've just poked to a new high in eurodollar, that 122.50 area, after sort of 4 days in a row of direction changes. That effectively leaves only that 123.50 area as the last resistance. I'd like to see some more participation from some of the other dollar pairs for this to suggest that we're heading broadly lower, but we are partly getting that this morning. Let's see if it if the move sticks into the close, and I think it would also be helpful, for example, for bunds to go back and test those highs yield-wise. All right, we have earnings are always ongoing, and you've still got some pretty big names these days coming out this week. Peter, I'll let you take it away with your overview on slide 10.
Thanks, John. Well, I think we pretty much have come to an end of the Q1 earnings season. We are seven weeks away from the end of the Q1, so it's come to a close now, but we still have some Chinese name reporting of importance. We have the Xiaomi, Pinduoduo on Wednesday, and Meituan on Friday. So those three we expected last week, but they, the reporting date was wrong. It was postponed, but now we're trying this week. These are very important for the technology sector. And as I said, Chinese technology stocks are quite cheap. I mean, if you compare the CSI 300, which is basically the closest you get to a NASDAQ 100 equivalent, it's trading at 16.5 times EV to EBITDA. You have the NASDAQ at close to 22. So there you have it. And their growth profile is actually more aggressive. So let's see whether this positive momentum in Chinese equities carry through the week. And then we have AutoZone. Today, I thought that was an interesting one to sort of watch at least what the management is saying, because we've had all these indicators suggesting that the used car market is just seeing prices exploding higher, and AutoZone is very much in the accessories and auto parts industry. So I'm pretty sure they have a perspective on what's really going on. So that's, I think that's one is an interesting from a macro perspective. Then the big one is of course Nvidia on Wednesday with its more than 300 billion market cap. It's part of our mega caps theme basket. It's the leader in graphical processing units. It's used for data centers. It's used for the efforts within self-driving technology. It's used for gaming. It's definitely used in for crypto mining, although the company has really lately been doing a lot of virtue signaling. I think it's probably the right signal to do, and they are signaling that they want to try to do better channel checks on whether when companies are ordering a large bulk of GPUs, whether it's used for crypto mining, because of all the constraints we're seeing in the car industry and elsewhere. I think it seems like Nvidia wants to not channel too many of their cards in the way of crypto mining. So, but nevertheless, it's very a big behemoth there for the US technology industry. And then we have Snowflake, which is part of our bubble basket. It's their second earnings release since they did the IPO last year. The key thing for them is that they price for perfection. So the as I call the revenue growth decay profile, so how much the revenue growth year and year and quarter and quarter declines for every quarter it goes on, is the key one for determining the valuation of Snowflake, because that's basically the key thing you model on a highly valued equity like Snowflake. And then finally we have Salesforce, which is this upcoming threat to Microsoft with all their acquisitions. They are up for Thursdays. Obviously that's also important because it's part of the six big technology companies in the US. So we'll be watching that as well.
All right, indeed. And if we look at the macro calendar, quite a few items there for today. As Altea noted, the consumer confidence number, it will be interesting to see how that shapes up. Also on the inflation expectation side, and where we are at these 2-week lows on the longer term yields in the US. And then Friday also noted the PCE inflation data. And then the folks trading the Kiwi should note, of course, that the RBNZ will be out with their latest rate announcement. No change expected there, obviously, on rates, and a press conference following. The one adjustment that we might see is some move towards tapering. There is this focus on the macroprudential side, although I think that they're in a bit wait and see mode to see how the government's initiatives towards tamping down on house price rises will pan out before they get too aggressive on that front. And Aussie Kiwis have been really sluggish in a range here and looking for inspiration. So we'll see if that meeting and the press conference provides it. We'll call it a wrap for today. Thanks for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.